Hello?
Hey, Charles. Sorry about that.
Oh,
The
I was
call's
there.
time out at 60 minutes. Google records all
Oh,
our
shit.
conversations, so once it hits an hour, it has to restart the recording. But no, I was just saying, like, the guys that are able to overpay are usually the guys that are up there now, like Perfect Trees. And the only reason they're able to overpay, though, is because they got a surplus of work coming in. So
You know, with
we'll
what I
get you there.
do and the way I do it, because I don't feel like I murder my customers, but I don't, because I'm on these forums with guys around the country, and the
Yeah,
younger
but
guys
if you
will say,
want something done right, you know,
what do you
like
tell you
I
guys
got
by the
palm trees in my backyard, and I didn't know about this when I bought the house. But I knew they were there, but I just didn't understand like the ramifications of the trees. I just thought they looked nice because it lines the back of the house and it just cuts it off from the street back there. But there's some power lines there, and if my palm trees, it's my responsibility because they're in my yard. If they get up into that power line, the city's gonna fine me way more than it's gonna cost me to just hire the tree guys. So I actually have a contract with a tree company out here. Basically came with the house. It was that or cut my trees down. And I don't want to cut them down. I like them. They look good. So, it's a nature of the beast, I guess.
That's kind of a good thing about California then, because here, Oncor, the electric company, will just come and hack them some bitches right below the line.
I wish they would, maybe not mess them up, but if they would just handle the trimming themselves, yeah, but they put it on me because the base of the trees come into my yard and then it kind of, they lean over a little bit that way. And if it gets
Well,
to that point, I
often
got to take care of it.
it always is. I was going to say often, but it always is. These contractors know where the power, that they don't care if they're gone by the time you get. They plant a tree that's compatible with the environment. It's like, for example, there's palm trees that, some of them grow shorter, or trim them,
Yeah, no, these ones are pretty tall. And I'm only about a mile off from Huntington Beach. And then I gotta go maybe another mile up the road to get to the pier. So, I can give you an idea.
Well, I'm a little
Yeah.
familiar.
Yeah.
Niantic, Vegas, and it's all palm trees there, but here you got to have a horticulturist, a full-time staff to make your palm trees live. But
Yeah. I used to go, why the heck costs so much to cut these damn trees? Why I gotta pay these guys to cut the trees? And then the first time I seen them do it, I was like, oh yeah. Yeah, I ain't doing that. Hey, that's the wind's blowing them side to
don't get me started. Those guys
Yeah.
call me up.
I'm like, okay,
Here
here's your
goes,
money.
only here's 10 minutes. You could have done it yourself. You called
Yeah.
us.
Yeah. Nah, yeah. These ones are not ones I'd be willing to do myself. If they're that manageable, I'd go buy a chainsaw, save myself some money, and just go do the work. But, yeah. The ones I have, you gotta get those things. They got these spikes that dig into the tree and this belt that goes around their hips and they shimmy up that thing. The spikes are in the bottom of their shoe.
A chainsaw wants to, it's always trying to hurt you too.
Yeah, he's got it swinging around from his belt and then you hear, branches come flying down, they're dropping them off and yeah, it's kind of a
Well,
circus when it happens.
I just bought this place a few months ago, but I was out, instead of recycling, I decided I've got a wood-burning stove. Like I said, I'm a country boy. I'm taking some bunch of wood out back, and I'm out there
The
cutting. My
best.
neighbor comes
Make
over,
some good pizza.
and he comes over, hey, can I borrow a chainsaw? Okay. About an hour later, he comes over and he's going to the emergency room. He's about to cut his finger off.
Oh, damn. Yeah. My grandfather, when he was retired, and he used to keep himself busy by doing carpentry stuff in his garage. He had a big old garage. He was the one that was chauffeured Eisenhower. And I remember one day I was a kid. I came in there talking to him and what? And he picked his head up and he ran his finger right into a bandsaw. And he always told me, "Look what you did to my finger," like jokingly, But that was a scary day watching him chop his fingertip off like
God,
that.
that's
Yeah, I was traumatized. It was only the tip, like he still had half his nail, It just squirted like crazy though. The finger just so much blood comes out of that thing.
I bet he was I bet I could listen to him all night, I imagine.
Oh yeah. He told me one time he was driving Eisenhower and Dwight passed him a scotch up to the front. And he goes, what are you doing? I'm driving, you know. And Dwight telling him, who's going to pull you over? Who's going to stop you, you know? And he goes, all right.
That's all.
Back then, it's a different era, you know. It's different breed.
That's gold right there.
But he told me when he graduated Huntington Beach High School, class of, I think it was 52 or 50. Yeah, I think it was 52.
Wow.
And he was the last person. Everybody was, you know, they had the war prior years and stuff. And so the military was still, like, yeah, super active. He was in a family, nine. But he goes into this group, and they all doing their training, and they go through camp or wherever the process is. And he says, about 150 guys. He says, I was the very last guy. And he's like, I thought they were going to tell me that I didn't make the cut. And they handed him a card and said, you're going to the White House. Now, that's like the coolest one, because he was just always explaining to me the whole training process, and we had to do these aptitude tests, these math tests, and all these things. And he basically aced everything across the board, from physical to mental, all the way down.
To make the Secret Service or something like that, it's being brilliant isn't enough.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a big part of it. But he's telling me about these guns. They used to have specialized guns that were, like, tailored to fit into their jacket, so it didn't look like they had anything. And he's like, anytime I could reach my hand in there and just blow somebody to pieces from the driver's seat, you know, like it was already there. All he had to do is, like, reach into his coat as if he was getting his wallet, but the gun's already pointed towards the window. So if he ever got stopped or if there was ever an issue where he had to roll the window down and shoot out of it, he's basically driving with a gun on his shoulder right there. And go right through. Yeah, he said they used to have guys there with fake arms. He used to point it out to me all the time when we'd see the president and the Secret Service. He'd go, oh, that's a fake arm right there. That guy right there is a fake arm. He's ever standing on the left side of the president, that arm is fake, and he's got a gun in his actual hand. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, that's how they move. Like, oh my God. You know, so they're walking around with a constantly have their hand on a gun and a fake arm hanging off their shoulder, so it looks like they're just walking militantly with their hands down to their side, and he's always ready to fire.
Yeah,
no joke. Yeah. They have all these protocols. They were getting ambushed.
All the great fathers like I said, but to have one that drove guys now, that's mind-boggling.
Yeah, Dwight was a crazy one, though, you know. The more I look into the presidents, that's where I go, oh, wow. It's not just about some presidents, it's that president. But my grandpa, when he started getting sick, he started saying crazy stuff. Like, he said, you know how cell phones were made? I remember this, and he was like, this must have been like a month or two before he died. He goes, Dwight, we went out there, the Secret Service went out there one day, we found cell phones. We found the cell phones in the middle of a field. He kept telling me, and he's like, we reverse engineered the cell phone. It wasn't ours. It came from outer space. You know, he kept saying crazy stuff, and I'm going, what the hell, you know? So I go online and I start looking at all this stuff. And Dwight D. Eisenhower's term was when all the alien conspiracies started happening in the 50s after the war. And they had radio, but they didn't have cell phones where they can, now all of a sudden after that, they started, we have a satellite in space and, you know, we are able to send signals there, bounce it off the satellite and come back. Yeah. But he said that was all reverse engineered from some kind of thing that they found. And it's interesting.
Yep. Well, that stuff, well, now you, where you can't bury anything, a lot of that stuff is coming to light.
Yeah. Yeah, well, especially Trump. Trump does not care. He does not care about any security clearances or anything, you know. He just blabbers it out.
Yeah. You don't give a fuck.
He has no filter, that guy.
But as far as aliens, I mean, it's hard to, you know, they made it, they did a good job of making it kind of ridiculous, but
yeah.
Nowadays, hard to understand how there couldn't be.
I like Joe Rogan. Yeah, his take on it. He's like, what do you think aliens are gonna do? Like, what do we do to fish? You know, you catch a fish, you put a hook in its mouth, you probe them, you know, you take a picture, and then you throw them back in the water. You're not going down there. So he's like, the aliens are doing the same thing, and when the people tell us the crazy crap that happened to them, we're going, no, that would never happen. This guy's a psycho. You know?
Elon is so brilliant. Mm-hmm. It's almost easy to believe that he's an alien.
yeah. I love his thing though, because they talk about his like manifesto and what he's trying to do with his life. And he's going, you know, Tesla is cool and all this stuff's cool, but in reality, he's like, I'm trying to make humans a multi-planetary species, because either we're going to blow ourselves up in a crazy world war with all these nukes, or global warming is going to blow us up because we're continuously getting closer to the sun. And he's like, those are two facts. So one of those two crazy things are going to happen. And they talk about mass extinction events. And he's like, my goal is to, with my life, is to get human beings on a different planet. And he's like, that's really what I want to do. So that way we can have an exit plan and we don't cease to exist.
As rare as his intelligence is, he has a rare quality that's rare among geniuses, where he has this high level, high degree of conscientiousness. Because usually an IQ like that naturally imposes on you an egoic viewpoint of the world. But he doesn't have that.
Yeah, he's very positive. Yeah, I noticed that too. I was like, hey, he's actually really had a good outlook on life, you know? He's like, have more children, you know? It's good. Life's good.
He doesn't have the suffering that's usually necessary to evolve that conscientiousness. He has this awareness of how little time he has.
Yeah, it's acceptance, though, you know? They say ignorance is bliss, but also there's a point of where you get to this hyper-intelligent, and then your emotional capacity starts to kick in when you're... So you can either be somebody that's hyper-intelligent and you panic because of the information that you have, or you could just say, hey, that's the way it is, nothing's going to change, and you accept it. And then you're able to kind of, okay, well, it's a short ride. Let me enjoy the short ride instead of panic and stress.
He clearly embraces the suffering that
That's
why
we're not here forever. We're not here forever. Yeah. So.
Because when you're exceptional in any way, you generally find some avenue that creates a path in life where you can make money or have something that helps you avoid that necessary suffering. Mm-hmm. So that's why nobody gets a pass. But he may get a pass, or he doesn't get a pass because he invites it anyway. But he's a godsend, in my opinion, because of
his... I think so, too. I think it's like a once-in-a-generation type client or type guy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, they also, when they did that to his son with that, you know, gender thing, which helped, because that, you know, they feel like he killed his son. By promoting, you know, he had a son that was transgender, and
wait, who is this? I'm sorry, they sent me a message from the back end here. I was reading it.
Elon had a son that was transgender, and so he bought. They were able to convince him to have the surgeries and all that stuff, and so he feels like he killed his son, so that helped. But you know, whatever.
I mean, I'm sure that probably is why Trump just came out yesterday and was like, it was International Women's Day yesterday. And he's like, yeah, no matter what you chop off or how many chemicals you pump into your body, it doesn't make you a woman. Women are special. You know? He worded it the right way for once.
If you want to chop off your ding-a-ling, whatever you want.
Yeah, but that doesn't make you hurt, you know? He's like, women are uniquely divine and special. And I was like, attaboy, that's how you're supposed to translate it.
I think
it,
we all care about you, Murray, you know?
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Just don't say it.
No, I mean, they know how I feel out here, so it's okay. I'm just not super vocal about it. Sometimes I see it, and I'm just like, yeah, but this is what's going on between the ears, really. I'm like, yeah, it's crazy. And I have a son.
One more thing. So is it safe to say you were close to your grandfather?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's my best friend up until my son was born. And I feel like my God gave me my son in his image. I feel like,
well, if nothing else on the planet, you know, you got one deal probably because of that, you know, because his influence on you didn't leave you.
I grew up a lot different than my generation, though, you know. I didn't get a cell phone until I was like 16 years old, 17 years old, and okay. I got it myself, and so so I wasn't on the internet and social media.
You
I
don't
was
have
out to. Fishing and surfing and Huntington Beach, you know.
You should do real well because you don't have any competition.
Yeah. We got guys in here. We got 450 people in here, and they go, "Man, how you get to know the CEO?" And I go, "Well, you know, I go up to his office when they first hired me, and I shake his hand and I talk to him. You guys just send him an email."
Yeah.
I don't knock on the door and open it up, and I go, "Oh, I didn't even think about the email. I just let me walk upstairs. He's right here."
And he can tell real quick, he's the CEO for a reason probably, and he can tell real quick that you're not full of fucking shit.
Yeah, that's how I got hired here, actually. They turned me down twice. I just got out of school, and I caught them in the parking lot the second time they turned me down. I said, "Man, I've been really wanting to work here. You know, I went through, got all my credentials. I love what you guys have built." And he said, "Hey, come back tomorrow." And he's like, "If you could just walk up to me like this, you have no problem talking to other business owners, you know." He's like, let's do it tomorrow. Yeah,
it's beautiful because it resonates with me that you're probably simply as it is. Most things are pretty fucking simple. You're grandpa's grandson. You know, that's a beautiful
shake
thing.
Their hand and you look them in the eye, and that's just the way you do things. You know?
Yeah. Oh, how old's your son?
He's actually going to be 4, 1 month and 1 day from today. So on April 28th. I'm counting it down. I'm going to take them to Legoland.
sit down and watch. I grew up, part of who I am and my thing, I'm a Texas, Oklahoma boy, so I grew up on Westerns. Yeah. But the John Wayne guy. But
John Wayne Airport is right by us. We know all about John Wayne.
his movie, in 1972, The Cowboys. Every parent should sit down and watch that movie with their kids. It's a beautiful fucking movie. He's the third character in it. The two main characters are Mr. Nightlinger, he runs the chuck wagon. He's a black guy.
Oh, yeah. I see it. John Wayne with Will Anderson. Yeah.
Yeah. You're familiar.
I think I've watched it twice.
I can never get enough of that movie. Sometimes it's like therapy, you know. It's just one euphemism after another that's valuable. Burn it daylight.
I found a lot of solace in humor, but I'm a big like Jim Carrey type humor. Like I like watching Bruce Almighty a lot. That's kind of one of those movies. I turn it on, I fall asleep because I've seen it a million times, but it's just kind of like a comfort movie where it's like I don't know why it makes me so comfortable. I don't know if it's like, hey, God's out there, he can hear us, but maybe he might not be able to get to everything right now because he's so dang busy, but he's going to get to it. So
Carrie's a good example because he's on one hand, he is very evolved, but through his process, it's analogous with the John Wayne quote. I forget the exact quote, but when Jim Carrey talks about, I wish everybody could have $10 million and see how it doesn't help
doesn't
you.
Doesn't fix your problems. It would be nice, but it would only solve our problems for a minute. Like, I have a buddy of mine, I worked here with him for 7 years. His name's Tony. And Tony, he created this vape company and sold it, and guy's got billions of dollars now. He IPO'd it, sold it for like $28 million. So it's one of the largest ones. It's like in every gas station across the United States, the brand he made. Uh-huh. And this guy just had a baby girl, and he's got all the money in the world, and he's just bored. He's just bored.
Yep.
He's always like, hey, you want to go play golf? I'm like, nah, I got work. So you get to a point where you buy the house, you buy all the stuff. He's got a Lamborghini. He's got all the stuff that he dreamed about as a kid, you know, and then now he's got the baby girl, and I guess that's going to be able to keep him busy. But it really is one of those things where it's like, okay, once all your problems are quote-unquote solved, you're just bored. You know, you're just bored.
You need suffering. It's hard to adopt suffering.
Yeah, yeah. You need something to focus on, though. Like, I love work. Even if I have a bunch of money, I like to wake up every day with something to do. I don't want to sit there like, what am I going to do today? Am I going to golf again? I just golfed the last 6 days in a row. Am I going to, you know what I mean? Like, am I going to fish again? You know?
That movie reminds me of my best friend. He's this guy who... He's pretty and he's intelligent and all that. He's the guy that people think has it made, right? And always has, and never suffered anything. But he stutters a little bit now. He's conquered it over the years, but over the years he might stutter, but he always had this confidence anyway. And when I tell other people about him, I go, you know, imagine one of the scariest moments for everybody is going into a job interview. And what are you scared of? You're scared that you might stutter. So imagine if you already have a stutter, you know?
Yeah.
So I told him about that movie because he's got a 5-year-old and he's my age. And I told him to watch that movie and he finally did because of the one of the kids stutters and the, one of the other kids is pounding and he goes up, hey, that, 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 you know, when he comes over after they get him, you know, you almost got your buddy killed out there. No, I wouldn't ever do that. Oh, if you were out there, we'd have heard you loud and clear. And he goes, you son of a bitch. Say that again. You dirty rotten son of a bitch. I wouldn't make a habit of that, you know. And the kid didn't stutter after that, you know, which is, but that was finally resonated with him because he's going through this thing with his kid where he's raising him in uptown. I said, you need to bring him
downtown.
You need to put different school. Yeah.
Yeah.
Raise him in the country. You know?
Yep.
But
yeah. I'm the same way. So my lady always does that too. She goes, well, why do you travel so much? And I go, it's the same reason I corrected you earlier and I was telling you California is the best place in the world.
Yeah.
And it's because I told her, I went all over the world and I didn't realize it until like I got into places like Indonesia. And I thought I was going there for a vacation. And these people are living amongst monkeys. And the monkeys are stealing their food, let alone somebody else stealing their food. You could punish a man for a crime and throw him in jail and persuade him to not steal your stuff. But what are you going to do about a wild monkey? And he's just made more of them. And these people are living with that their entire life as an everyday problem. And, you know, it's they don't have jobs and they don't just have money in an economy like we have where they could just go to a store and pick things up, you know.
Well, and, absolutely, Father, that experience still may have eluded you. And that's beautiful.
Well, right, yeah, exactly, even just being here in the States. So it took me, though, getting to a certain point. Like, my mom died when I was young. My grandfather was torn apart with that. My mom had cancer, and she died. That was his daughter. And so we got really close for that, like, last 10 years of his life, because after that happened, we were already close, but that just made us even closer. But then I'd gone through not having her. Then he passed away, and I was just kind of like, okay, now I feel real on my own. My mom passed away when I was 16.
Wow. How old were you when your grandfather passed away?
My grandpa passed away 7 years ago, so I was 27.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he outlived his own daughter by 10 years.
So beautiful suffering. Yeah, you probably understand that.
Oh, yeah, it was tough, and I had to do everything on my own. It wasn't like they had left a bunch of stuff for me, so I was like, okay, I got to figure this stuff out. I was already pretty much had it figured out, but then it got to a point of doing well, where I was doing better than my mom was doing when she was alive with her 4 kids. You know what I mean? And so I was like, okay. I'm going to go travel and see what this is all about. And then I realized, like, oh, there is something different about people who have money and that actually do travel. because you do go out there and experience suffering, but it's just not your own personal suffering. You're not stuck in your four walls. You go out there and you see everybody else's suffering, and you try to make it your problem, and then you help them. And so it's crazy because I would just naturally develop this thing where I would inherit other people's problems and solve them for them.
What you just said is so fucking beautiful. Because,
yeah, but you get this good karma from it. It's like a real karma system. Like, God's using me, I feel like, as a vessel. Like, go out and help these people fix these things, and then good things will come back to you. Yeah.
We all go through a process where we want to answer these questions, right? Well, I went through that process in studying psychology, but one of the questions was, what is love? And for me, I found God organically through psychology, but because before I was 45, it lacked the intellectual currency. But the question of what is love is, love is the inviting of more of one's own suffering to lessen another's, is what I came up with.
So yeah, for you, that's what we do as men, right? That,
yeah. What your grandpa gave you, your mother was, you grasp things before you really grasp them. You know? Like, you get that where I didn't get it till 45.
Wow. Yeah, I was always a little bit ahead of everybody, and I don't know if it was the way I was raised or the stuff that I went through.
The way you were raised.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, nature versus nurture, right? I had a little bit of both of them, you know? It was like the nurture and the way I was raised, but then the nature of the situation kind of both molded.
But Grandpa never said it. What his objective was with his relationship with you was exactly that. He wanted the result was to be for you to have a life with less suffering.
Yeah. I don't think anybody understood him the way I did. He used to say that at my mom's funeral, because he was like, yeah, you know, he had all girls. He had four girls. So I was like the first boy that his daughter's son that he was able to, like, okay, this is my grandson. I have a boy in my gene pool on my side as the patriarch. And so he kind of took to that to, now I can dump into him what what I've experienced and what you should be as a man in the world, you know. So I used to start taking me to church when I was so young. I was like 6 years old. He was taking me to church with him every Sunday.
Wow.
He used to bribe me with the breakfast, you know. It was the bacon that got me to go to church at 6 years. He says, you go to church and then we'll go get breakfast. So I would wake up at 6:30, wait for his car to pull up at 6 years old on a Sunday.
Yeah,
just so that I could go have breakfast with my grandpa, because that's what I like. We'd either go eat or we'd go fishing and then eat, you know. But we always church first.
You didn't turn off with God either, because going to church, you know, didn't bode well for me.
Yeah, I see that too, you know. I went to a school around the time that my mom had passed away, my last 2 years of high school. It was called Brethren Christian out here in Huntington Beach. It was a Christian school. And I can't tell you how many kids I see go from that school to their hellions now. They're horrible. They're so bad. It's just like, I can't even believe it. I tried to explain it to my wife. I was like, this dude and this chick, they went to my school, and look at them, you know, they got their necks tattooed, they got their faces tattooed. I'm like, what are you doing, you know? They get pushed away from it, though. You can't force people into anything, because then you push it away. You start to resent God. You feel like God's the reason that you can't do this. Your parents won't let you do that.
Well, all these fairy tale stories and shit, right?
Yeah.
But it was Jordan Peterson, who's I'm a fan of from my interest in psychology. But he he was an atheist well into his career. But he found God because he couldn't run from him. And when everything he talked about was scientific based and backed by thousands of hours of clinical study.
Yeah. You go around the world, Charles, and he's very real. He's very real.
Oh,
everywhere I've gone.
When you find God, all of a sudden he's everywhere.
He's everywhere.
I was studying psychology.
You don't even deny it. People from other religions.
In psychology, it always lacked literally the intellectual currency to actually have the belief or faith. But when I was studying with psychology, it's the ego and suffering, right? You understand that life is suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had an epiphany that, just one day, it was the ego is Satan's answer to suffering. And it was like this light bulb that fucking came on. And I was like, that was just it for me. And then all of a sudden, God was everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it was beautiful. But
He really is. Anything that you get into, it kind of always circles back to God. I go to China and they get Buddhism, and you know, go to Indonesia and these guys are, they got 20 different gods, and you know.
Now some of your most relevant atheists are coming around.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, it's also something that's very like, there is a lot of proof of Christ and His existence, especially.
It's fucking
wild.
Now I go, how did this elude me? You know, it is wild.
But you know, the devil, you know, how's he going to win? How's he going to start getting people back over to hell? You know, he's got to try to bury it somehow. So we're in Middle Earth, you know, we're in heaven and hell. So we're in the middle here, and it's half and half going around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Within our own spirits, you know, until we're fully on the other side of things. But yeah, so
well,
I get these things. But you know, Trump was the only president that talked about God. You know that?
Yeah, in a time where you couldn't.
Yeah,
you know?
Everybody's constantly persecuting him about being evil, and he starts talking about God and anti-homosexuality, and the Bible tells you about Sodom and Gomorrah, and homosexuality, and they tell you that's Satan.
Yeah.
And it's just, but it's those things, and he's openly speaking about it and kind of rejecting it and going another way, and then they wonder how he won the election, and I go, you know, we're still out here just because we're silent. The real Christians, they go, God tells us not to hate people. It teaches us love, so we accept them even if they don't follow our beliefs, and that's fine, but don't bleed over into talking to my kid about it, and, you know, stuff like that. And so that's where we got to start drawing the line, and, you know. We're okay with coexisting, but you want to eradicate us and only have you.
When I drop my kid off at this school, I need to learn mathematics and science, okay? Keep your other shit out.
Yeah, he doesn't need to be talking about that, and when he does, he can come talk to his dad about it. I'll tell him how he got here. So your mom's the most beautiful girl in the world, right? And I thought so, too. That's how you got here, bucko.
My buddy, we were over there one day, and it's my buddy's wife comes out, and she tells him to come in or something, and he smarted back, and I kind of jumped on him real quick, and Mark's like, what was that? And I go, I don't know, man, you don't talk to your mother like that, period, you know. My mother was an alcoholic and somewhat abusive with the belt and all that shit. I don't care any of that, you know. If you don't respect and love your mother,
That's horrible. Yeah, that's the worst kind of person right there. I used to smack my own friends. We'd be playing football. Yeah, you talk to your mom like that? All right, I'll see you at practice.
you got
nothing saying coming, man. That's just, you know. That's me and my wife go back and forth about that, because my son's still real small, and he doesn't understand the difference between guys and girls, you know? So he looks at mom and thinks he can roughhouse with mom and make me and him wrestle around on the floor. And then he'll hit her or grab her hair. And I'll smack him upside the head. And she goes, oh, he's just a baby. He's not even 4 years old. I'm like, he's your baby. But if I don't nip him in the butt, somebody else is going to. So you want me to do it, or you want to wait until he becomes an old piece of crap and somebody beats the crap out of him?
Well, they're so, I dated this Mexican girl, and we watched this soap opera called Teresa, and I got into it. I mean, admittedly, it's hilarious to me, too. But I didn't pick up a bit of Spanish, you know. They're such sponges. Like, you send me this video of him playing football, and he's doing these great things and stuff, and I see it from a different point of view. I go, it's beautiful because nobody's told him yet that that's supposed to be difficult.
Yeah.
It's so amazing at that time. Yeah. So give him a language. Your wife speaks Spanish?
Yep. Yeah, she does. She's fluent.
So he'll end up, you know, I would say,
picking it
give
up.
Him another language, an instrument, you know.
Oh,
there's this guy.
He's got the same head So I'm like, oh, he does have a lot of my mannerisms. But I'm like, his kid's going to be bright. But boys, we just kind of come out airheaded. We just kind of come out like, okay, let's figure it out. Let's jump. You don't find out about gravity, the hard way until you fall. You don't find out about fire till you get burned. It's just like that. You can't just tell them. You can't explain it to them. But he's figuring things out at a rapid pace. And I'm going, this kid's going to be bright.
It's been proven psychologically that if your four-year-old doesn't play well with other children,
he doesn't.
It's probably irreversible.
Yeah.
It's like, and Peterson explains it like, well, not only is it backed with science, but now all the other kids are progressing. Because they're, like, play is such an important thing that he talks about where, as adults, you should always implement some form of play, whether it's business or anything else. And if you don't learn that, then you get behind and you can never get, because all the other kids are advancing, but they're so fragile that it'll probably, I'm sure he'll end up.
I had a scare with my boy like that where he's even to this day, I can take him to the park and he won't talk to the other kids. The other kids are crazy because he's an only child. And so everything he's surrounded by is me and his mother for the most part. And he's got cousins, and they're all older than him. And so when you put him in a group of kids his age, he goes and starts talking to the adults in the area. And then, he doesn't really mesh with them. And I used to think, oh, maybe my son's got an issue with talking. And so I started taking him to a speech class and stuff like that, try to get him around other kids his age, see if he'd kind of come out of it. And the teacher, after two sessions, goes, you know your kid's hyperlexic? He might be on the spectrum. I go, what do you mean? And she sits down a Cat in a Hat book. He was 2 years old, and he read the entire Cat in a Hat book. He could read. He had known all the ABCs already. He can count to 30 by the time he was 2. And
wow.
Whoa. Yeah. They're like, that's not normal. He's already able to read.
I probably would have been diagnosed with ADHD or something.
That's what I was thinking. It kind of looks like that until he gets to around other people. He doesn't want to talk. But if I come up to him and I go, hey, what's this or what's that? He knows what everything is. He's able to label everything. I could say, what does that sign say? He'll read it. And he's not even 4. So it's like, I know he's going to be fine in kindergarten from a scholastic angle. But the socializing part is still where I'm worried. It's like, what's he going to pick up from those other kids? What are their parents teaching them at home that they're bringing into school that my son's going to pick up on?
You're probably going to have too much of a hard time getting in your own way as a father. And he's probably very well, but just his great-grandfather's great-grandson. That's probably brilliant.
Yeah, that's what they're telling me too. At first I thought he was on the spectrum, and they go like, no, he's not. He's not autistic in any way. And I go, okay, and
he's already bored with
it. Yeah, he's just, there's like, when I take him around kids, it's not that he doesn't like other kids, it's just he's not entertained by it. It doesn't gauge him. You have to challenge him, in a different way. Like, okay, the car rolls across the floor. He doesn't have a problem playing with himself, but somebody else comes and show him, and he's like, yeah, I already know the car rolls. I already know the bike rolls. Like, go away. Like, I don't need you over here with your boogers. He just kind of looks at it like... he acts like a little man. He's like a grown little man. He looks at people weird, and he just watches people often. It's very, very strange, but he's like my best friend. So that's the funny thing, too, is that I don't go, oh, he's a kid. I'll take him down to Balboa in Newport Beach and put him on the Ferris wheel, or we'll go down to the beach and we'll swim together. We'll run around. We'll play catch together. He's more used to playing with dad than I think he is with other kids, because I've kind of abandoned my friends.
my buddy Mark.
They just want to drink.
And my buddy Mark is the best. Everybody, he talks to me regularly, but he's 100% dad. And that's the beautiful thing. But I'm also the guy that, when he calls, he's got to go take off, but he still stays in touch with me. But, it's hard to articulate how valuable that is. in the absence of that, they're fucking doomed. You know.
Yeah.
You know,
he's got to be able to adjust. You know, I know that the end goal is like the one person I can't live without. I got to teach him how to live without me. And that's really what the end goal is. And I got to socialize him and get him to be like, you know, you got to talk to other people. But I think it's going to come naturally. He hasn't started school yet, you know. Well, he's going to be forced to interact with them next year. By the time he's five, he's not going to have a choice because we're going to be dropping him off with him every year. So I'm not panicking about it. I'm like, let nature take its course.
That kid's going to be fine.
Yeah, he'll be all right. Yeah, I always tell him, like, if you're not all right, just let me know and I'll come sort it out.
That's all that matters.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Like, dad's always got your back.
You know, maybe one of these days I'll get into the difference in mind. Of course, my dad was a kid when he had me, but it's so valuable. It's so, if you knew the value, you need to do to a large degree.
Oh, yeah.
Of what you're doing. I'm talking about a purpose.
I had two dads, honestly. I got very lucky in that department. But my actual dad, his dad got killed when he was young. And so I have my dad who didn't have a dad, who understood what it was like to not have a dad. And he was always on me. He never let me feel a day that I didn't have a dad. And then I had my grandfather who had four girls. And that was the first boy in his lineage. So he gravitated to me. So I had two great, great guys on me, but they had very different outlooks on things.
My grandfather was shot and killed by my grandmother.
Jesus.
When he was your age.
Wow. And,
but he was a neat guy from everybody that told us and everything. And everybody said, you're just like grandpa and all this shit. But then, my dad was 19 when he had me. He didn't have a father. So he never spoke to me, you know, so that was,
wow.
That was, and I didn't have, and I had ended up having issues with him in my 40s.
Wow.
Cause I loved him unconditionally, but I was a twin. Anyway, I had to sort this shit out. So the difference is, I'm just now able to start living my life. That's the difference of how beautiful that relationship is you have with your son and how impactful your father and your grandfather. It's not something that it takes.
Me and my dad struggled though too, because my dad was a bad guy. My grandpa was a real good guy, but a real bad guy, if you know what I mean. He was a good badass. But my dad was just a bad. And he'd done a lot of prison time shortly after my mom had passed away. So it was really just me and my grandpa for when I was like 16 to 23 and he'd gotten out of jail. And then my grandpa passed away a couple of years after that. But by the time my dad got out of jail, he went in and I was 16. He came out, I was 23. I was already working, already a man. He goes, hey, go do this. And I go, nope. And we used to butt heads a lot because it's like, I'm not your son anymore. I'm taking responsibility for my own life. I'm not going to let you dictate it.
You're already your grandfather's.
Yeah. At that point, yeah. He had already prepared me to go on without him because I was so used to him not being there. It was just me and my grandpa for that 7 years. So,
well, then there's the exact difference, right? Your father was... Because you very well could have been a product of the absence of him.
Yeah, certainly. But, you know, we've worked on it. You know, now he's a grandpa, and my son's got his last name, and he's up there
and
now.
Hey,
he's about 65.
You can be you're allowed to be the grandfather that mine was to me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I tell him. I'm like, I'm not going to cut you off from him, but if I see you start doing the stuff that you were doing with me, you know, my dad had me in the garage boxing as a young kid, punching, fighting, and telling me to be the baddest guy on the block. And, you know, and I would get into these big fights with my dad and telling him, you know, I wanted to off myself. And my mom would call my grandpa and say, come pick him up for church tomorrow. You know, so me and my dad used to fight and my grandpa would be the mediator. My grandpa would say, I might be old, but there ain't nobody, you ain't better than me. He said, I'll come over here and straighten you out. He was the only guy that talked to my dad like that, you know.
That's the difference between your grandfather raised you to be the.
But he was a real Christian. That was the crazy thing. He was a real Christian.
Warrior in the garden. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But he's like, if I got to off somebody for my grandson, I'll do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Carry the sword, know how to use it, but keep the sheath. That is the real death to me, cool, inherit the earth.
Yeah. Super dangerous, but super kind and God fearing. The only thing
you want to be dangerous. You want to be a monster, but you want to be able to control it. That's the key to life.
Yeah. If you've seen me, you'd go, okay. I'm about 6'2", 220. I'm not a little guy. You know, I work out all the time. Oh, yeah.
and those nice guys are often, you know, the last motherfuckers you want.
Oh, they're weak. They're the worst. They're the worst. You know, that's the thing I
well, tell that's what Peter talked about. Being timid or being weak is not a quality you want to, it's not a good quality. It doesn't make you good.
Yeah, you don't want to be known for that. Yeah. Yeah, I'm very stern. They always ask me that too, though. They're like, how do you get stuff done? And I'm like, you know, you just got to straight talk people, you know, and if you let them know where you're coming from, they won't take offense to it. But if you're just brash without letting them know where you're coming from, of course you're going to sound like an a-hole.
You know? Well, I actually like it, though, because I'm too happy to tell motherfuckers to fuck off real quick.
But yeah, you got to be careful with that, though, because then you just get
like I said, well, an asshole. But I also tell people I'm not a work in progress at 52 years old.
So, yeah, I've already seen it. I don't got the patience for it anymore.
For example, when I said to you, I appreciate you grabbing me by the ear there. If it depends on where it's coming from, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not telling that guy to fuck off.
Yeah.
So I'm going to see if there's something behind this, and then I end up finding out there is.
Yeah. I was very much the same as you, Charles, but I started to get a little more patient with my son being around, and then the golf. I've been playing a lot of golf all of a sudden this past, like, year, and it taught me, like, okay, you know, you can kind of, if you be patient, some things that might seem bad for a second ain't so bad.
We're probably a lot alike, but you got there 20 years sooner.
Yeah. That's what the CEO tells me all the time.
I had to go through the absence of that. This is what your grandfather gave. The absence of him is for somebody like me. I had to go through this process of suffering to get there. Right. That's what influenced.
And that's the whole. You have to go through bad things to appreciate things, you know. So I was telling you earlier too, like, oh, California's best place. And it's like I went and seen so many bad places to understand what is actually a good place.
And you're not oblivious to the obvious socioeconomic and problems.
Oh yeah, it's horrible.
From your point of view,
Right, yeah.
Yeah, of gratitude and positivity, right.
It's kind of those trade-offs, though, you know? It's like, okay, would you rather live in a first-world country where, yes, they tax you, but, you know, in third-world countries, they don't even have just an economy that we have to be taxed from, and now you're having to provide this way and do things this way, and it's what would you rather have, you know? And you could sit there and go, man, I work so many hours and I sleep so many hours.
Yeah,
the climate, you know, sometimes you're in a frozen place, you can't go play golf. You live in Russia. So I've had so many of those moments throughout my life of just like, man, if I was this person, I couldn't do that. And that helps me appreciate
California is perfect if you can afford to live there and you stay away from the politics. So you just have it figured out.
Yeah, exactly. You got to know what you're all about and just stick to it and, you know. I got a pretty solid routine. If I'm not working or taking care of my son, and I'm probably working out and playing golf, and that's it. And we're hanging out with my wife, you know. We go out to dinner. So I'm pretty busy all the time. And then it's just we're in this beautiful place. Yeah. There shouldn't be anything else I should be focusing on. But if you're one of those people where maybe, like, you drink a lot or something, then, you know, it can get real ugly real fast if you're not under control 24/7, you know. So.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a slippery
slope. Well, brother, I hope I get to talk to you a lot more.
We got to wrap this up. I just needed to, I have your client interview scheduled. The client interview where'd it go? Is scheduled. Yeah, I got you locked in there tomorrow. Where'd it go? It was between 1 and 2 Central.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so we'll be doing that. Oh, but I do have to secure the first month's payment. I thought we already did that. Jesus.
Oh, here we go.
Okay, hold on. All right, so it's $199. How did you want to do that?
Credit card.
Okay, is it under your name, the business name, or both?
Both.
Okay. Yeah, Texas Tree Guy. I'll send you a receipt, too. This is a business expense, so you could just write it off, too, and get it back that way and with the customers we bring in for you. A win-win. And then the billing address, is it going to be the same as the street address? They're sending that Google verification letter in the mail?
No, the business address is different.
Okay, what's the, it's not the 3650 Custer Parkway?
No, actually, that was my residence, and I moved from there. But
okay.
I've got a business address, which is 1508.
1508?
Uh-huh. West Lookout Drive.
Lookout. Okay. And the city?
Suite 14.
Okay, Suite 14.
Number 30.
Suite 1430?
Yeah.
Okay.
I need to pay that bill too.
It's like a mailing, just for mailing.
Well, it's $200 a year, and I got an email and I forgot about it. So
yeah. Yeah, you don't want them having give that to somebody else. That'll ruin it. And then, what's the city and zip code for this?
Oh, that's Richardson 75080.
Oh, okay. So it's right next to where you live. Okay.
Yeah, I used to live right over there.
Okay. Used to.
Now I live in up Texoma, Texas, Oklahoma border, Lake Texoma.
Okay. You said you spent some time in Oklahoma, yeah?
Well, I was born in Enid, and my whole family's from there. So I grew up in Allen. You might have heard of Allen now.
But yeah.
It was a small town, and now they, I don't know, the biggest high school in the country or some shit. But,
that's and Allen, Texas, you're talking about, yeah?
Yeah, it's about an hour from...
Well known, yeah. All over. We hear about it here, too. Allen,
now it's like thousands of students. But I graduated with 330 people in 91.
Wow.
It was a small town, you know, farmland. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah, now it's humongous. Nothing like Texas football, though. You know, I had that on my list of things to do when I was young. And I'd go out there. You know, I remember I watched a game. It was a school in Corpus Christi played another school out of Las Vegas, Bishop Gorman. And I had always heard about Texas football and seen movies, Friday Night Lights, but I just wanted to experience it. And it really is something else. Like, it felt like I was going to an NFL game. Or a college game.
My brother and I, like I said, I'm a twin, but we were average athletes, and we got a third Division III kind of scholarship because we went to this Methodist school in Kansas where they had it was $12,000 a year, which was a lot at the time, but they had a twin award, which was half. We ended up with this quasi football scholarship, but these other kids that came from there, from Kansas and Arkansas, that we were to that school to play with us. It was hilarious because I remember this one guy had our whole high school football team could have started there. But these guys were 5A state championships in Kansas, and we're like, you wouldn't have started on our team. He told the coach, you need to go back to Allen and get this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy. But I'll never forget. That was actually the first time I'd ever, because I wasn't a super athlete, but I could lift some weights, and I had my way with everybody.
Wow.
There was these couple of fat kids that were from South.
You just say that casually?
Yeah. Well, it's wild. Cause this,
I could bench press 405. No problem.
In high school, I remember the skinny tight end from Dallas was there, and it was the first time that I'd ever crossed somebody where I realized there's another world.
Right. Oh, yeah. You got your bell rung.
He grabbed me, and it's just a skinny, you know, black guy tied in. And I went, okay, I see that. There's another world up there.
Yeah, there's different levels. Definitely different levels. Yeah, I was well known for football out here. And we used to play a lot of Modern Day and Bishop Gorman, a lot of the number one schools in the country.
No.
So back then, same height, but I wasn't 220. I was probably about 170, 175. I ran a 4.340. Yeah, I was real, lightning in a bottle. So I used to play a lot of like offense. So I was wide receiver, running back. They would have anything they could get the ball in my hands. I had a knack for being able to run for my life, is what it was. It must have been my dad growing up. I got so used to, hey, I'm going to get the belt if I don't move. Yeah, something.
You know, I got away from the NFL, but it was the last thing I remember about it. It was so amazing what Belichick did with those Welkers. Not to sound racist or anything, but those black guys are just so phenomenally.
Oh, yeah, I know it. I used to go through, I'm telling you. So I had this guy down the street that lived down the street from us. My grandfather used to, I stay away from those kids. They're up to no good. I would go hang out with them. I don't care. And, but they would tell me about their family history because I just like talking stuff with people, you know. And then they go, yeah, we actually can track our lineage back to slavery. And I go, what? You know, he goes, yeah, there was inbreeding in our family at one point. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, oh, it wasn't that it was our family members having sex with our family members, but back in the day, they would take the strongest slave and make them mate with the strongest female, whether they liked it or not. And, and that was kind of the process because they were slaves. They were trying to create a stronger body that could do more work. You know, it was like getting a fancier gardening tool. Believe it or not. And so that genetics carried down though, you know, so you got a lot of those guys like that now. You get these superhuman like black guys. It's crazy.
Well, I was sitting there watching a short on Facebook, which I don't do much Facebook, but I caught this short in this, I forget the back, they pitched it to the back. Oh, you know, he caught an interception. Mm. And so, you know, if you're starting in the NFL secondary, you got to understand what a freak is in Division I college football.
Yeah.
And so this guy, he picks this ball up. And Metcalf comes from 20 yards behind him and runs him down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that guy's a monster. I grew up out here in Southern California, so unfortunately I'm a Chargers fan. I was hoping that they were gonna get DK Metcalf this summer, and he went over to the Steelers.
So mind-boggling.
Yeah. He's a freak. He's a freak of nature. What's crazy is how big he is. Yeah. Yeah,
that's insane.
Yeah, but he's a weird personality, you know. That guy's all flamboyant, and, you know, you see him on there, and you're like, he's acting a little weird. Yeah, he has earrings and his nails painted. Reminds me of, like, old Dennis Rodman or something, you know. Yeah.
Well, I can't he went to the Cowboys at the end. They used to, I love me some meat.
Terrell Owens. Yeah. I've seen him in the street out here before in Newport Beach, driving around in a nice car. Yeah, no, he's still got a lot of money. He's over in a rich area, and Kobe Bryant and all those guys lived over here in Newport Beach. I think LeBron lives over there now, he's in L.A. Yeah, but a lot of them would play for the L.A. sports teams or the San Diego sports teams, but they live here in Orange County.
Well, you know, another thing that's interesting about California is, like, which I never realized, what woke me up to the quarter, I used to be the guy, God, they make so much money, but then I realized, you know, and I tell people, no, there's 32 jobs, and they can only really fill about half of them. So, they, you know, it doesn't matter what they make. But the idea of when you're trying to recruit these guys, what's really mind-boggling is you can go to Alabama, or you can go to USC and Snoop Dogg's on the sidelines. You know, you think that would be this huge advantage, you know, but
no.
Which another example where that if you you might you're probably not too young to remember when Leinart and Young, Texas and USC played in the championship.
Yeah, I love that game with Reggie Bush. I still remember that game to this day.
But with the quarterback thing, neither of those guys did anything in the NFL as quarterbacks. You know, that's how hard the fucking job is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to be everything, though. You have to be mental. You got to be physical.
Yeah.
My grandfather used to tell me that, too, because he played quarterback growing